Here it is, episode 8, Under Pressure Outdoors Podcast. This week we're going over trophy deer management versus quality deer management and the common misconception between the differences in the two. This week's episode is brought to you by Sportsman Shield. It's a durable outdoor decal that makes thieves believe your trail camera has a GPS tracking system inside. Fool thieves, hunt more, worry less. Get 20% off your next order with the code UPOUTDOORS20 at checkout. Capital U, capital P, capital O, and outdoors 2020 at checkout. So hop on their website, check them out, buy you some stickers. You put an ADT sign out in front of your house, why wouldn't you do the same thing for your trail camera? So tonight I got Briar with me.
How y'all doing? I'm back.
He just
moved into the house.
Yeah, got his new house moved in. So
unpacking still.
Still? He ain't have that much to unpack.
I got two rooms full of boxes in there. That's okay, I don't go in those rooms.
Yeah, you're the only one living in
there. That's right.
Quality deer management, trophy deer management. A lot of times, you know, if you're sitting around the hunting camp or you're gathered with a group of guys or whatever, and you'll hear that topic brought up, QDM, QDMA, QDMA, the Quality Deer Management Association. And a lot of times that you're, a lot of guys are confusing trophy deer management with quality deer management. You've got three types of deer management. Traditional deer management, which is practiced by most states. So under traditional deer management, any antlered buck is harvested, regardless of age or antler quality, and few does are harvested. Deer researcher Dr. Grant Woods refers to traditional deer management as maximum buck harvest management. This strategy.
That's the thing about that. I shouldn't be killing every buck you see.
Well, no, but
according to the law,
traditional deer management. Yeah. Is generally what states' harvest laws are based off of.
I think
as a general rule.
Here in Florida, I think they're real bad about that. Look at them boys that run dogs up in the forest. If it's got horns, they kill it, you know?
Well, not anymore. They've changed that. They put some antler restrictions on there for a little bit more of a quality deer management aspect to it.
It's not what it should be. And then they don't let nobody kill any does up there either.
That is true.
That's the big thing. Maybe I didn't let you get that far, but in Florida, you can't. I mean, you have a week where you can kill does.
You can kill does on some management areas. During archery.
That's right. You can't kill during archery, but it's not.
Like I'm pretty sure.
I think
Lake George, you can shoot does during archery.
But there's not near the numbers are the numbers of the buck to doe ratio
right.
Is skewed so heavy to does, it's insane.
And the purpose of quality deer management is herd health.
I mean, we'll get more into that as we go here, but
let me finish up this traditional management. It's a strategy. Oh man. The smoke is getting me. There you go.
Maybe the smoke will follow me.
Traditional deer management, like I said, is a strategy used that every state in the country used and some continue still to use today.
Yeah.
Florida.
Florida's bad, I think.
Mostly that style of management. To pin the state laws, but you've got some other states.
I think Georgia does.
Georgia's a decent example of a mix between the two because you do have a very large doe harvest.
Yes,
that you can take there, and then some of your counties within the state are quality deer managed, but Georgia in and of itself, you can kill 2 bucks and 10 does a year. But
they do have weekends.
One of those
are buck only, but
in some counties, Yeah, where I we think, were. Some counties, it stays that way year-round.
We had, what, one?
We had one weekend, which was opening weekend, and rifle was buck-only weekend.
But see, I mean, that's a good way to manage it. But, I mean, that should, I think that should change about every year. You go out and you assess what, I mean, I'm sure these.
It does.
State biologists for whatever is in that county.
It does change every year.
And see.
Some states get more into, or some states, some counties end up with more doe days. Some end up with less every year.
You know, depending on the herd in that area.
Right.
You know?
And they use traditional deer management most of the time when the herd is below the habitat's carrying capacity. But it really fails when the herd equals or exceeds the carrying capacity.
See, that's when it makes sense.
Right.
At that point, you don't kill your breeding does.
Correct.
I mean, when your numbers are low, yeah, let's not kill does.
And in reality, comparative to the past, Florida's deer numbers are low. I'm not sure what the capacity is as a whole for any of the regions in the state, but they are lower than they have been. And when I say past, I mean before me and you started hunting.
Yeah.
30 years ago. So,
but at the same time, there's less habitat.
Right.
And I mean, there's 1,000 people a day moving to Florida.
Yeah.
So we're eating into a lot of habitat.
But a lot of times guys are going to practice. Well, they want to. They'll say they practice quality deer management strictly for antler growth is what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're
passing on. They end up being
on,
more trophy deer management.
Right. Your quality deer management is shooting bucks that are
it's what, 4.5 to 5?
Something like that, I think. I can't. Trophy deer management is 5.5 to 7.
Yeah.
So somewhere in that it's 3, 4, 5. Yeah.
4.5 to 5.5. But I mean, to me, that's like as a hunter in the woods, it's really hard to age an animal on the hoof. And
it's not impossible to do, but it gives you, with practice, you can get pretty close. Never completely accurate without using the jaw, but.
What I don't understand with the quality deer management, how is it going to hurt to kill that 7.5-year-old buck? It's, or 8.
So you're
a buck that's beyond his prime and not really breeding as many does.
Well, so
why
QDM quality deer management is your bucks, your harvesting bucks at the 2.5 to 4.5-year-old range. Your trophy deer management is 5.5 to 7.5.
Yeah.
And the reason you're capping it at 7.5 is because generally after that 7-year mark, those deer tend to start, they reach a point where they devote more of their protein and calorie intake to staying alive.
I understand
rather
that.
Than growing rack. Growing
why,
rack.
Why would you not want to get rid of those bucks? Why would that not be a buck to kill? Because
well, it's not saying.
Or does that fall more into the cull buck kind of thing?
Well, I'll go on the record right now and say there's no such thing as a cull buck.
I know what you mean, but as
genetics don't come from.
I understand
the male; they come from the female. So, and that
well,
and
what I'm getting at is why I mean that's a buck that's no longer breeding your does. So why would you not want to? I mean, why would
he's
it,
still breeding, but what's your the thing is that
I'm talking older,
right? I understand
those,
that
after those horns have started to, they're not
nobody's saying that. All right, he's 8.5. Don't kill him.
Okay.
What you're saying is you're trying to shoot that 5.5 to 7.5-year-old deer because that is the area, the time in which they reach peak growth.
Okay.
After 7.5 years, they start to decline. Therefore, because your trophy deer management for antlers, they are in turn less desirable for the trophy.
Yeah. That's all that's saying. Not necessarily
correct.
Not to shoot that older buck.
And in reality, man, to me, because I've killed some old bucks. I shot a doe that aged at 7.5 when I was on Fort Campbell, and that's the oldest deer I've shot that I know of. But to kill a deer that age, especially a doe that age in a state where you can harvest does, a lot of does, That's a feat, because that's not a dumb deer.
No.
You know, I'm sure I was not the first person, the second person, or the third person to shoot at that doe.
It's made, you know, 7 years through a hunting season, especially if you kill it on public land, you know.
Right, and that's exactly where I did kill it. And
I've killed some a few times, you know.
I've killed some old bucks that were on the decline.
Yeah.
And so is my brother, that big 10-point, I think it was a 10-point shot this year, didn't hardly have any teeth left. So it's a trophy in and of itself to, when you reach a deer that age, just to be able to outsmart it. Yeah. That's where you're getting your trophy there, which is great.
See, I think that's to me, as a hunter, I think that's more of a trophy than it being, you know, scoring 170 inches or whatever. You know, if I killed that old, smart old buck that's made it through 8 deer seasons, and it's still
living to,
until it comes across me, that's a trophy.
I would love to get a buck.
Don't get me wrong. Before I die, nice to 8-10 point to put on my wall at the house. But
right. I don't. How do I explain my hunting style? Because it's not. I'm not going to sit here and say that I trophy hunt. I'm not a trophy hunter.
No.
But I'm not a meat hunter either.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I, and as far as deer age goes, that I don't shoot young bucks, because I will shoot a 2.5-year-old buck if he is of good size and rack quality. But I'm not going to shoot a spike or a 4-point or a 6-point.
But I mean, at that point.
But you get up into that time, that era, you know, the period where they start to decline. The old buck that I shot was a 5-point. But he was huge, like 18-inch spread, big, tall, just.
Yeah.
But, you know, thin horned, just a really weak rack, but big body, back sagging, belly hanging down.
Yeah. I mean, if I look at an 8-point and I can tell he's a real young deer, like. He might be in that 2.5, 3.5. I probably won't shoot him. You know, it might be kind of hard not to. I might think twice.
Well, you know, and I'm a big advocate for shoot what makes you happy.
But if he
shoot what's legal, what makes you happy?
I understand, but I'd like to, especially if I'm on a, now. If we were on like last year, in that buck's dead, our place, our old place.
Did you hear that buck snort?
If we were on that property, I probably would have shot him.
Oh yeah,
but if we were on a property, I'm saying if we were on a property that we're or like, if I was hunting in the forest, I'd probably shoot him there too, because he's gonna get shot, anyways.
Well,
if any other hunter sees him, he's shooting at an 8-point in Florida, in that forest. I can promise you.
Yes,
especially if he's getting run by dogs, and dog hunters are gonna kill him.
I couldn't. And there's,
so there's no point to.
That's not a mentality I like to keep.
But like I've said, if I'm on a property where somewhere. Where we want to be there for a while, and that 8-point is 2.5, 3.5 steps out, and I know he's a young deer because we've watched him on trail cameras or whatever. I'm gonna let him walk.
Right, and that's a big thing too. Even on if you're hunting on a small plot of land, you've got to get with your neighbors.
Yeah, but if we
and talk to them, and if you're all working on the same, you know, reading off the same sheet of music. And you're trying to get those bigger quality bucks.
On our old place, if we were thinking about staying there for a while, I say that because that'd probably been the only deer I've seen all season. You know? If I got that lucky to see one on our place, our old place. That's why I say that. And, like, in a forest, like I said, but, first dog hunter, that second runs out.
Well, I'll say this. I don't like that frame of mind because it's a slippery slope.
Yeah, it is.
Because
then everybody else is going to say the same thing.
Well, I say it's a slippery slope because you can. I understand the frame of mind because to a point it is true.
Yeah.
If you don't shoot it, somebody else will. But that slope gets real slippery real quick.
Yeah.
Because you'll set goals for yourself that I'm going to kill an 8-point. I'm not going to shoot anything smaller than an 8-point.
Yeah.
And then a 6 walks out and you say, well, if I don't shoot it, somebody else will. So this year you shoot a 6. And then next year it turns into a 4-point.
Yeah.
And then it's a spike. Because if you don't shoot it, somebody else will.
Yeah.
And but the one thing I mean,
that's for myself, when I say an 8, because that'd be a really good bucket. 2.5, 3.5 years old. And if it's already an 8-point, that's going to be a really nice buck in a couple of years.
Yeah. And I also can't stand, and I'm going to call it an excuse, the excuse of you can't eat the horns.
Yeah, it is an excuse.
It is an excuse.
I've used it myself, and I've told people that, hey, man, you can't eat them horns when I killed a small buck.
But, you know. You're right, you can't eat the horns, so why shoot a spike in a state where you're allowed to shoot a doe?
The thing a lot of people say is, you know, like I said, when they can't eat them horns, they go, oh, them old bucks, they're all tough, and that's not always the truth.
Sometimes
if you know how to cook and you cook it right, it's not going to be that tough. It's going to be good. Sometimes it might take a little more preparation in your cooking to make it tender and taste better, but
I tell you what, I've never shot a deer or a buck, and I've shot bucks in rut, all blown out, and I've never been into a venison burger and said, dang, this sucker's tough.
Yeah.
And I've never laid into a backstrap and said, man, this sucker's tough.
You know,
The only thing I've ever eaten that was kind of chewy was neck roast.
Let me say,
One thing I did one time and I'll never do again is have steaks made.
Yeah.
Because you have to cut the steaks so thin you can't hardly, you can't cook it right. It just gets too cooked.
I had a guy that, I think it was bad.
Don't get deer steaks made unless you like ketchup on your steak. And
because you gotta,
if you like ketchup on your steak, if you like ketchup on your steak, then this probably ain't the place for you.
I think you're listening to the wrong podcast. But if you're watching, yeah, keep watching.
I'll tell you this: I do like red on my plate when I have a steak, but it's because the steak is bleeding, not because I put ketchup on it.
You know what? Knock its horns off, smack it on the butt, and throw it on the plate, man. That's about it.
A little bit of salt and pepper and melt some butter over it.
That's
just
right.
Just get it hot enough to melt the butter.
Pretty much. You know what? You sear the outside. Done.
You make the outside change colors.
That's right.
So, and then, you know, back to, I was talking about Georgia and their deer management practices. In the state of Georgia, of your two bucks, one of those bucks has to have four points on one side. That's a statewide regulation, right? Then you get into some counties, like I know Randolph County, requires both of your bucks to have 4 points on one side.
See, I mean, I agree with, you know, 4 points on one side for one deer more than I do both of them. And I say that for... And maybe in some county they should make an exception for youth. But if it's like a kid's first deer, I'm not going to tell that kid not to shoot.
Well, I can tell you this.
You know.
In those counties where it is 4 points on one side for both deer, you see more bucks with 4 points on one side.
You know, and that's a good point, too. But like I said, if it's the law, it's the law. And I'm obviously, if I'm hunting with a kid, I'm going to teach the kid to obey the laws. But, I mean, if I'm sitting in the stand with a kid...
But at the same time...
And a spike walks out and it's legal, I'm going to be like, knock a hole in it, bud.
At the same time, that just goes back to the... But you can't eat the horns, just...
I understand. And then... But that's just strictly for the first buck. Once the kid's got the first buck, it's like, all right, kid. Now, you got the first one out of the way. Now it's time, let's get you a monster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or just shoot a better quality deer.
No, yeah.
You don't have to be a monster.
But you know what I'm saying.
I'm all for killing big bucks, but I really have to say that I'm not going to tell my kids if a monster steps out and they have an opportunity to shoot at it, not to, for a first deer.
Yeah. Oh, no. yeah, by all means.
But at the same time, had I killed it, had I killed one that young at the age of 12 when I shot my first buck, had I killed that 9-point that I shot at the age of 19 where I actually went out and put in my own work and picked my own stand and sat there and stuff like that. And really, it wouldn't have been as meant as much.
Yeah.
And I tell you what meant even more than that 9 point. Was the 13 point I shot in Kentucky at the age of 24, where I actually went out there. I scouted the area all summer in the preseason. I hunted that area all through the season, moved my stand around a few times until I finally got into the right spot to kill that buck. That was just the sense of accomplishment there, having literally done everything myself, and to do all of that on public land to boot was a good sense of accomplishment there.
I mean,
and that's what it's about.
I can completely understand that. Like I said, if I'm gonna tell you, for the first buck, that's the way I was.
My
grandfather told me, like, we had that horns, and you fucking put it on.
We had that
on the back, and then after that, it was like, all right, now okay, it's got to have, you know. You got to kill a nice one now.
And I'm not saying I disagree with you. And obviously, you should know that. You read the rules that I wrote for our club. That was in the rules.
Yeah.
You know, adults and kids over the age of, 16?
Yeah.
You're shooting a buck that's going to be,
yeah,
I think I said 6 point or better the first year.
Yeah.
Unless it's their first buck, you know, even at 16.
Yeah.
If you're over the age of 18, sorry, you're shooting a 6 point for your first buck.
Six or better.
You're an adult.
Yeah.
You're a grown man or woman, whatever we're dealing with. You're abiding by the rules everybody else is. It's not fair, even if it is your first year.
Yeah.
But a youth, a kid.
Yeah.
Shoot whatever. Whatever makes them happy.
Yeah.
And pulls them into that sport. The sport and brings.
And that's just for a buck. That's what I'm, you know what I mean?
Right.
By all means, kill the doe, too. You know, if it's legal. Again, throw that out there. If it's legal.
That was my first deer. My first deer was a doe.
Kill a doe. I haven't killed a doe because most of my life I've hunted in Florida. And then when I was a kid, I didn't bow hunt. So
I haven't killed a lot of does. And you know, and I tell you this, I've never been one to hunt for numbers. Yeah. I've been hunting since I was, I've been hunting with my dad since before I could walk. I was riding in a car seat around the Dogwoods. When he started dog hunting, when he first started hunting on his own in his 20s. And then when I remember going hunting with my dad at, you know, 5-6 years old, I didn't carry a gun then, obviously.
Man.
I was a little kid. But I didn't start carrying, I started hunting for deer. Let's see, 6 years old. I probably carried my Red Rider.
Yeah.
Carried a Red Rider to the tree stand with me. And then 7, I started carrying a .22.
Yeah.
I was allowed to carry a .22, and I'd get to shoot at rabbits at the end of the hunt if they'd come out in the food plot and stuff like that. And then at the age of 8-9 years old, I started carrying my dad's .30-30.
Yeah.
And I was still sitting in the same tree with him.
Yeah.
About the age of 9 or 10,
yeah,
I started sitting in a separate tree, but usually within eyesight, 50 or 60 yards away. Sometimes you could only see me because of my orange.
Yeah.
He could only see me because of my orange, but he was always able to tell me if a deer was coming my way from his way or vice versa. So it kind of, baby steps.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started hunting on my own as my brother got older and started hunting. He would tell me where to hunt, and I would go there and sit. He'd take me to the stand, come pick me back up, so on and so forth.
I don't remember how old I was. I was older than 10, maybe, when I started carrying a gun. I remember being a little kid and hunting in the forest. My grandpa taking us, like, once to run dogs. And then we ran dogs like one season. And then he got that lease in Casha. But I mean, the one season I went when I was a little older, I had a single shot 20 gauge with some buckshot in it.
Yeah.
And then off and on, we go to dove shoot and shoot doves. By then, I was old and big enough, I usually had a Well, no, for a couple seasons, I shot that single shot 20. Got some dove, killed a few.
And, you know, I,
And then,
I'm all for getting...
12 gauge. I used my dad's old double barrel. I missed that shotgun.
Yeah.
Sad. Dude, I'd take that shotgun it. Duck hunting if we could. If I still had it, that'd be my duck gun right there.
That's
double. That's a bird killing.
I'm all for getting letting kids shoot that spike or that 4-point or whatever to get them, you know, pulled into the into the sport, because that's how future hunters for conservation.
Yeah.
There's no other way to bring up that.
Yeah.
That next generation.
But you want to talk about a good time? Take them on a dove shoot, man.
Oh yeah. Well, I can't wait till Ryland gets a little bigger and we can take him out on a moorhen hunt.
There we go.
Or get him out in the duck blind shooting some coots.
There you go.
Water swatting some ducks. He'd have a blast.
Yeah.
He'd have a blast. But, you know, that's a totally different topic.
Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about that one day.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to get into that. So, but trophy deer management as an approach where only fully mature bucks, 5.5 to 7.5 year old with high scoring antlers are harvested. With the exception of, and they, you know, they say low scoring middle aged bucks, which are your cull bucks, but, or what they refer to as, people refer to as a cull buck.
But yeah, most of that is.
It's all based on nutrition.
It's just a nutrition thing.
They've done studies.
And even the trophy deer management, they kill, I think they want you below the carrying capacity, and they want, if I remember correctly, they want more bucks than doe slightly skewed.
You're right. And
they want that for the nutrition for the buck.
In trophy management, does are aggressively harvested to maintain low deer density and optimum nutrition for the remaining animals.
I disagree with that, because that nutrition for a good buck starts when a doe's pregnant.
It does. Well, here's the thing, is they've done studies.
Man, studies have been done on all that.
You're killing those quote unquote cull bucks. One thing, you're never going to influence a wild deer herd.
Yeah.
Trying to shoot out bucks with antlers that are less than desirable, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of times you see these less desirable antler deer, and it's not because of bad genetics that they have those less desirable antlers. The size of the rack of the deer and the quality of rack they grow, is more dependent on the nutrition of the doe at the time she is carrying the fawn.
Yeah. That's what I'm
saying. When the fawn is born, not the size of the buck that bred her.
No.
Secondly, it's dependent on...
Some of those studies are, like I said, dependent on nutrition. If they're having the right nutrition, they can turn
it depends on nutrition.
Turn off those genetics.
Right.
They could take one of them little scrub bucks from Ocala and put him in freaking Iowa where they're growing in monsters. And then he'll start growing.
He gets bigger.
Because the nutrition.
Well, that's another thing, too. You have a lot of people come down here to Florida and say, man, y'all deer the size of dogs. And, yes, our deer are not 250 pounds.
No.
And the reason they're not 250 pounds is because if they're 250 pounds, they would die.
They would.
Because they're too big for the heat. That's right.
The heat, the bugs. It's just, there's
they have to be that smaller body deer to survive in this hotter climate. But you can still grow a good rack down here with proper nutrition. And they prove that every year. Guys killing monsters out of South Florida. They always kill a big buck out of Rock Springs Run.
Yeah.
Always, every year. So it comes down to habitat, nutrition, nutrition.
Yeah.
Nutrition, 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 nutrition. That's where you're planting those food plots like we talked about.
Yeah.
And you're putting out that extra nutrition and minerals and stuff in the summertime. They really, really, really need minerals when it's dry out.
You give the deer the nutrition, and they're gonna. Here in Florida, they're not gonna get like the 250 pounds. It ain't gonna happen.
No,
but
you can grow some big racks.
You can.
Florida deer can be a lot like Texas. If you look at a lot of your monsters coming out of Texas,
they're not real big.
You don't have like these big heavy necks and stuff like that you see come out of your northern states, Iowa, Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, stuff like that. You don't see those big heavy deer again because it's hot in Texas, just like it's hot in Florida.
Yeah.
So the deer can't maintain that body weight.
No. And they don't need that, the fat like they do up there to survive the winter.
So, it's trophy deer management is not practical in a lot of the United States, and the strategy is negatively viewed by much of the hunting and non-hunting public because of the fact that you're so aggressively killing does. And, you're literally, I would say it's almost, trophy deer management gets kind of viewed, it turns into a cash cow.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those guys that are doing that trophy deer management, they're hunting in a high fenced area.
Yeah.
Because that's the only real way you can control genetics is to keep it an outside, keep deer in one spot.
Yeah. If you can do that, then it's possible. But I mean,
like you said earlier, example. You had the same thing that comes into play where if I don't shoot it, somebody else will.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that fence, he's going to go on the neighbor's property. And it turns into the whole aspect. I know you've heard it before. One man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah.
Just because it's not a shooter to you don't mean it's not a shooter to me.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
But quality deer management is more about herd health.
Yeah.
You have a good, healthy herd. And in quality deer management, when you're taking good care of that herd and making sure there's, your carrying capacity is where it needs to be on your land and stuff. And to really know that, you have to get a biologist on the ground to come look at your deer, look at your food sources and stuff like that. Yeah. And
food, water, all that stuff.
If you're hunting a 200-acre piece, and we're going to say, well, let's make it easy numbers. So I'm going to leave acreage out of it. You're hunting a piece of property with a carrying capacity of 20 deer, right? Yeah. That's not to say that you can't improve the property you hunt on to carry more deer.
Yeah, by
planting food plots, creating bedding areas, water sources. Right. So it's possible to do that.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing to do for your herd. Keep your deer healthy. Help your deer see more deer. Stress. Another thing too, I was going to touch on a minute ago, and I missed was you talking about the coal buck.
Yeah.
A lot of that can come from injury.
Yes, that's true.
You can injure a deer. When a deer is injured,
it goes listening. Like sometimes, usually, like if it injures its right leg, the left horn will.
Yeah, you see it on the opposite side. Yeah. So then that can be anything from an injury during a fight to getting hit by a car to taking a bad hit during the season. They take a good injury and they have to heal from that. And that just means they devote more of their nutrients to healing than to growing antlers. Because it turns into, life over limb.
Yeah.
Well,
antlers are a show of like, look at me. To a doe, it's like, I can grow these horns. I can grow these big, beautiful horns.
Yeah.
I eat that much. I have that much left over to grow these big, beautiful horns.
Right. I'm healthy enough to be able to do this. Therefore, you should breed with me.
Yeah.
Right. There's a whole lot that goes into it. And it's really interesting. I mean, you can dig deep down the rabbit hole into this.
Really deep. How deep do you want to go? Really.
But keeping your deer herd healthy.
There you go. Spit it out.
Yeah, is what's most important.
I mean, I think that's more important.
And I'll tell you this, too. A healthy deer herd is more resistant to disease.
Yeah.
Chronic wasting disease is not something you're going to be able to prevent, but with a very healthy deer herd, you can see deer survive things like blue tongue.
Yeah.
Because it's not impossible for deer to survive that. But they have to be very healthy.
Yeah.
When they get sick in order to survive that, because they have to devote a lot of resources without being able to eat and things like that for an extended period of time in order to keep themselves alive.
Yeah.
But you don't see a lot of that down here. You see more of that in the northern regions.
Yeah.
Kentucky, Tennessee, stuff like that. So
I'm surprised down here you don't get stuff like that with some of this water, this old stagnant swamp water. But
so I'll give you the different. So I'll go over some of these seven items I'm about to go over. They show you how the different strategies affect your deer herds and habitats. Each strategy is unique and shouldn't be confused with the others. For example, QDM is different from quality deer management is different from trophy deer management, yeah, as it is from traditional strategies.
Each of them are.
Even though many hunters and non-hunters incorrectly consider QDM, quality deer management, trophy deer management, to be one and the same.
That's not the case.
So, with traditional deer management, there are no age requirements for traditional deer management.
For a buck.
For a buck, correct. With quality deer management, or acreage requirements, sorry, there's no acreage requirements for traditional deer management. For quality deer management, varying acreage, that can vary for QDM. Again, that's all based on habitat, yeah, right? For trophy deer management, that's generally 5,000 plus acres.
Yeah.
Your buck harvest for traditional deer management, you shoot mostly young bucks, traditional deer management.
Yeah, just because you end up seeing a lot of young bucks.
Right. Quality deer management, you're shooting mainly 2.5 to 4.5 year old bucks. Trophy deer management, you shoot fully mature 5.5 to 7.5 year old bucks. Your doe harvest in traditional deer management, you shoot very few, if any.
Mm-hmm.
Quality deer management, you shoot an adequate number in order to keep your carrying capacity where it needs to be to maintain herd health.
Yeah.
And then trophy deer management, you shoot a very high number so that there's more food for the bucks.
Yeah.
And they compete with less does.
Yeah. But that's where I really don't like.
And then
your trophy deer management, it's shooting that all those does. Because like I said, like we were talking about, the health of your buck and some of that starts when that doe is carrying that fawn.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? But, I mean, I guess if it works, it works for them.
Your buck-to-doe ratio and traditional deer management is generally heavily skewed towards does.
Yeah.
And that's just in order to keep that carry, in order to keep it from the so you don't run out of deer.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's pretty much what that is.
QDM has a more balanced ratio, though still favoring does.
Yeah.
And then trophy deer management has a nearly equal ratio. Like they're shooting for a 1-to-1 ratio. Whereas you're in your quality deer management, you may be looking at more like a 4-to-1 style ratio. Your deer versus habitat in the traditional deer management, your deer herd is often greater than the habitat's carrying capacity.
That's where is
traditional deer management.
Traditional is usually greater.
Yeah. Your deer herd and quality deer management, your deer herd is in balance with the habitat's carrying capacity. And in trophy deer management, your deer herd is often less than the habitat's carrying capacity.
See, that's where QDM, I like QDMA, is having that just right. Then your deer aren't competing with other deer, other animals for a food source. So they get the.
And that's another thing you gotta. And that's another thing that comes into the quality of deer management is you need to be looking at your
predators.
Well, I wouldn't say, predators. Obvious, yes, is a good thing. Yeah. If you've got high coyote numbers, the most effective way is to trap.
Yeah.
You can't kill out coyotes. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
coyotes, if they suffer a they've proven in the past where they think they can go in and kill them out. They'll, coyotes, when they howl, a female howls and she doesn't receive a howl back. When she does end up with a litter of pups, she has a larger litter when there's less coyotes in the area.
Yeah.
If you have a heavily populated area of coyotes, they have smaller litters. They control their own, pretty much control their own carrying capacity. So you have to trap, and you have to aggressively trap to, and constantly do it. Keep up with it.
Yeah.
And I was always raised, and I still practice today, that if I'm on a deer hunt and I see a coyote, it immediately becomes a coyote hunt.
Yeah. Right then and then.
And I'm going to shoot a coyote. Yeah. And I don't think, and I've had guys, I hunted on a place in Tennessee where we had four guys on it, and it was an even split. Two of us bow hunted and rifle hunted, yeah. And the other two strictly bow hunted. One of those two guys was not a big fan of us rifle hunting because he thought we scared off the deer.
Yeah.
Hunting with rifles. Entirely not true.
Yeah.
I have sat in hunts, shot a coyote, had it lay in the food plot where I shot it, and then 20 minutes later shot a doe in the same food plot. Yeah. I have hunted hunts where I've shot a deer, watched four or five more deer cross, then shot another deer, then watched 12 more deer cross, and then said, I'm going to get down and go have a cup of coffee now and get in the house because it's cold outside.
You know,
and then I've had
people say the same thing about people running dogs. People running dogs don't scare off deer. Otherwise, people that run dogs wouldn't kill no deer either.
Right. I mean, they do put a lot of pressure on the deer.
Yeah. It makes the hunt a lot harder. It's harder to pattern your deer. So, I mean, it makes hunting harder, as we've figured out. But it doesn't scare them off. Like I said, if it scared it off, there wouldn't be a single deer in Ocala.
Right. You wouldn't have deer in a lot of the southeast.
At least south of Florida. Or south of 40. There wouldn't be a deer in sight south of 40 if that was the case. Either that or they'd all be downtown Umatilla chewing on the football field.
So, wouldn't you like that?
I'd love it. Shoot one right off.
Walk
the front
out
porch.
The front yard and there shoot one from the front porch.
I don't think the city of Umatilla would like it a whole lot.
Probably not. Get a bow.
Get a bow, yeah.
So your influence on habitat with the different management practices, your traditional deer management has a moderate to severe habitat damage most of the time.
Yeah.
Which is what we see a lot down here. Yeah. And the habitat damage is mainly due to houses and roads and construction and stuff like that that goes through and tears up that habitat.
I have a hard time saying stop it, you know, because at the same time, you know, my job depends a lot upon a lot of that stuff.
And it's,
But I mean, I think there should be a balance in there somewhere. And for me, just struggling to find the balance, you know.
In
what
some
I mean?
States like Florida, it is a necessary evil.
Yes, it is.
I think there could be more done to, roads could be built more conservation minded.
Yeah.
And so could.
Yeah, I know. I can name one in particular that probably could have been. But
yeah.
The bridge was not.
46, are you talking about?
It's not. The road they're building on the 12 mile bridge is not 46. That's the toll road.
Well, that's going to be the toll road.
But all they really needed to do was widen 46.
Correct. But they couldn't put tolls on that, so.
Yeah.
We live in the land of the toll road down here.
Yeah.
Your QDM has a minimal impact on habitat, and so does trophy deer management.
Yeah.
And then you get into the big one, and this is what pushes a lot of traditional deer management to the states. Generally, in traditional deer management, there's a lot of high deer human conflicts.
Yeah.
Because there are so many deer and the habitat is damaged. And
yeah.
So the deer aren't, they don't stay in one place. They have to constantly move.
That's the thing. I mean, as far as here in Florida, you don't have that problem a whole lot, you know? You don't hear about people a lot. Not like you do, like, in South Georgia or something.
Right.
People are hitting. I mean, it's here and there. Around here in Central Florida, it's not so bad. Unless, like I said, you're driving through
and
forest.
QDM has a reduced deer-human complex.
Yeah.
Because they're pretty much sticking to their habitat. And then trophy deer management has a very low, because you not only do they stick to their habitat, but you have a lower
high fence.
You're below your carrying capacity.
You got a 10-foot fence around your property.
But each strategy has its place in deer management. But evaluation of the deer herd and habitats is necessary to correctly choose the strategy that will be most effective at producing a healthy deer herd and a healthy habitat.
Yeah.
Traditional deer management works when the deer population is below the habitat's carrying capacity and the goal is to increase the deer herd and provide recreational hunting. Trophy deer management works best when the goal is to produce mature trophy class bucks with high scoring antlers, and QDM works best when the deer population is at or exceeding the habitat's carrying capacity and the goal is to improve the health of the deer herd and balance it with available habitat. Fortunately, QDM also provides tremendous hunting opportunities. Unlike trophy deer management, it is a realistic goal for most hunters.
Yeah.
Because a lot of time, you know, all that takes is a little bit of work.
Yeah.
And you can improve your deer herd. Improve your habitat. The one thing I really like about quality deer management is you tend to see a lot of deer. Quality deer management.
Because you're reducing that. A lot of times with that, you're reducing your stress on your deer.
Right.
They're not. You don't have as much human to human contact, so they're not getting as scared and running off, and you know.
Right.
Like you said, bouncing around here or there, that kind of thing. So they're more relaxed. And when they come into the food plot, if you're hunting, they come into the food plot, they're not as weary. I mean, they're still going to be, because the wild animals got predators coming after them all the time. So, but you're going to have a little bit more of a laid-back deer coming in.
So we're coming to the end. You got a tip? What's your tip for this week?
Oh, man, I didn't think about it.
Me either. I didn't put a lot of thought into it.
Oh, man. I forgot about the tip of the week this week. I thought I thought of one last week, but I can't remember what it was that I was going to use.
What do you do to stay warm in a tree stand?
What do I do out? To stay? I put clothes on. Usually, I have found if I wear a little bit extra clothes to the stand, then I get not enough to where I'm sweating.
Yeah.
But if I'm warm getting in the stand, and when I put the warm clothes on, that helps me stay warm.
What I was going to say, and I brought you to that, kind of because I was going
to
say.
You don't want to sweat when you
get
there.
What I do is I put on to make my movement to the tree stand in the morning.
Yeah.
And especially if you're driving a pickup truck to where you're hunting, make sure when you're in your truck, you're not wearing your heavy jacket, you're not wearing your heavy pants, yeah. You're not wearing that stuff.
What I'm saying is you put some, maybe not all of that, but you put some of that on it when you're getting out of the truck.
I will
have enough to where you're going to warm up when you're walking to your stand. That way you're warm when you put your jacket on, your heavy insulated stuff on when it is good and cold. Then you're warm, and you're not trying to get warm.
I put on just enough going to the tree stand to where I maintain a comfortable level of cool as I'm moving. And
well,
I let the body movement keep me warm.
Yeah.
As soon as I get up, especially using a climber, where it takes a lot of effort to climb up a tree.
Climber would be different than just
when I get to the top, then I put my warm pants on over top, and I put my big jacket on and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
And then I sit there, and I stay warmer longer.
Yeah.
And for me, my feet sweat really bad.
Oh, my feet sweat terrible, so I usually don't have
a
lot on my feet.
I either wear thick socks with uninsulated boots, or I wear insulated boots with regular socks.
Yeah.
And my feet aren't always warm, But I find that if I try to wear insulated socks or thick socks with insulated boots, my feet usually end up pretty dang cold.
The other thing that helps me keep warm in the tree stand is a good cup of hot coffee.
Yes, sir.
That works every time. Warm me up from the inside out.
Because,
like, if I'm warm enough when I put my insulated clothes on, and I stay warmer longer instead of me sitting there shivering with my jacket on, going, "Why am I cold? I got all this thick insulated clothing on."
Right.
But if I'm warm when I put all that on, then I feel better than instead of waiting until I'm cold.
See, my tip of the week. I'll tell you this, especially on public land, always pack out everything you take in with you.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Don't leave trash in the woods. Nothing bothers me more than seeing garbage in the woods, especially when I can tell it came from other hunters.
Yeah.
When you see shotgun holes and garbage like that, really bothers me.
Yeah.
So me personally, I carry all my trash out that I brought with me,
and then
I take some more. Every little bit does make a difference, so it is what it is. Do your part for conservation, and that's all I can tell you. Until next week, you know, hit us up, give us that 5-star review. You listen this long. If you have a way to review us where you listen to us, give us a review. If not, find a way.
Find a way.
Give us a review. Shoot us an email. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like.
I think
you
can review us on Facebook. I think.
I'm not sure. But follow the Facebook page, Under Pressure Outdoors. Follow the Instagram, Under Pressure Outdoors.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week.